This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
You are listening to The Coming Out Tapes, an audio archive of LGBTQ stories. I am your curator, Keris Bradley. All right, welcome to The Coming Out Tapes. Today, I am aided by the very competent Anna Pozaisky, who has come to sound tech. We have made our way to some idyllic, imaginary place. We're next to a canal, there's a garden, it's beautiful, to interview Kit Redstone. So thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
My pleasure.
Would you like to introduce yourself for the listeners?
I'm Kit. I am a transgender man theatre maker, and I've just moved to the countryside.
Excellent. When did you first realise that you were a trans man?
I thought I was a boy up until the age of like 3 or something, when I started to realise that there was a difference between genders. And I was really kind of shocked and didn't quite understand what was going on and why I was being called a girl, which is quite strange because obviously you learn, you know, you learn about gender obviously lots of us think that gender is a social construct. So you obviously learn from gender from the people around you. So I don't remember that far back, and I can't remember what sort of specific things that I thought when I was like 2 years old were male or female. But I do know that I believed I was a boy, whatever being a boy meant to me.
And then you were told that you were a girl in a way that was conscious when you were 3-ish.
Yeah.
Do you remember what that period of your life?
I think I kind of thought that everybody was a bit stupid, you know, and didn't really understand. And I think very quickly I understood that I was, you know, in the body of a girl, or, you know what I mean, perceived as a girl, biologically read as female, but that wasn't correct. You know, so I think from a very young age, there was an element of sort of humouring people around it.
Do you remember when you first encountered terms like cisgender and transgender?
I mean, I didn't know that the word cisgender existed until I was like in my late 20s. You know, as I grew up, I guess I was born in 1981, and, you know, was growing up as a teenager in the 90s. And that language didn't exist. Transgender existed, but I didn't know any transgender people. And the only times that I ever saw a transgender person was in cinema. And I think the first transgender person that I saw on screen was a really negative representation of Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. And so for me, it was something to be ashamed of, something to be feared, something creepy and freakish. And it took me a long time to come to terms with the fact that that was utter bullshit. So it was always something that I hid from people, and, you know, and actually, like, my story is kind of, you know, it's definitely not a sob story. Like, before I transitioned, I was a very androgynous, I guess, girl, and people were never sure if I was a girl or a boy. They had no idea, you know, so it was kind of 50-50, actually more erring on the side of being a boy. So my experience of the world was kind of, I don't know, like, I don't feel that I ever experienced really being a woman in it, whatever that even means, in the traditional sense of being a woman.
You said that there was that period where you sort of felt like you were humouring people.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you stopped humouring people? And was that like a conscious decision?
I had, before I transitioned, so in my mid-20s, I came out as trans to my friends and family. And sorry, I've completely forgotten the question.
It was,
I know I'm answering it, but
when did you stop humouring people?
Yeah. So I came out as trans then. So I guess at that point I said, look, this is how I feel. This is what I want to do. My mum was very upset about it. She wasn't angry or anything. She was just very upset. And I can hardly remember this, but I think for a brief time I was binding. And for those of you who don't know, like binding my breasts. And I was using the men's toilets and stuff and asking people to call me, to use male pronouns. And then I think I got scared of taking it any further and sort of just receded back into kind of being, you know, sort of androgynous and allowing people to call me whatever they wanted for a long time, and tried to make my peace with that. So do you see what I mean? It kind of fluctuated. And then eventually in my mid 30s, I was getting older and I was looking into the future and I was seeing, I guess to me, it didn't make any sense. Like growing up as a woman just felt abhorrent to me for whatever reason. Like it just didn't feel right. Like the idea that I would start a family and be a mother, even if that was with another woman, I just couldn't, you know what I mean? It just felt so inauthentic to what I felt. And then I made the decision to kind of really go for it and properly transition, you know, like medically and to come out and change my name on documents and everything.
In terms of this like fluctuating journey, do you think that was driven by something internal, or do you think that there are like external stimulus to how your relationship with that process changed?
I think it was both, you know. So it was my reading of external stuff, you know what I mean? It was the way that I saw stuff, the way that, you know, it was also me kind of, I guess, internalizing transphobic ideas as well, you know, that I heard or saw or just knew about, you know. And a lot of it was not wanting to be a victim. I felt that, you know, the trans people that I'd seen represented were, you know what I mean, were stories of victimhood and loneliness and difficulty. And, you know, and then I think that, you know, after seeing sort of awful representations of trans people in films like Silence of the Lambs, which I mentioned earlier, and Dude, Where's My Car? I saw Boys Don't Cry with my aunt. And this was before she knew that I was trans, or she knew that I'd come out, you know, a bit and then decided not to pursue it. So I felt very uncomfortable watching it because it felt in some ways obviously very close to home. But then again, it was a story of, you know, I think it's an amazing film, really powerful story that needed to be told, but it's a story of, you know, of someone, you know, very much being a victim and suffering greatly and, you know, like, you know, being murdered, which didn't encourage me to embrace this, you know, this path, you know, with much enthusiasm, I guess.
Were there any like positive influences, like external influences?
Of trans people, I didn't really know any, you know, I think until I was much older, I didn't know any trans people. And I don't think so. I mean, maybe, I can't remember the name of it. There was a film with loads and loads of queer people in it that's very kind of celebratory from like the 90s.
Is it Australian?
No, what? Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
That's the only one I've got.
Yeah, maybe that's a good... Yeah, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. That's a good comparator. That's not the one I'm thinking of, but yes.
What other one might it be? Do you remember anything?
Is it called Short Bus or something?
Anyway,
I don't remember enough about it to talk about it, so I don't even know why I brought it up, but hey.
We'll just pretend that it was...
Yeah, yes, exactly.
So, who did you first come out to?
I guess the first time round, which I don't remember very well, I came out to my mum and my closest friends. And the second time I came out, when I came out, you know, and I was telling everyone, look, I'm going to do this now. I'm going to start taking hormones, all of that stuff. I came out first to my girlfriend at the time, which was relatively easy. And then to my mum, and it was the second time she'd heard it. So by this time she was kind of prepared, and she just said, I want you to be happy. And I'd say it went really well. And then I just wrote a massive post and put it on Facebook. And, you know, I'm Facebook friends with lots of people I barely even know, you know, some people I haven't even met. And, you know, it was great. I mean, you obviously get like a lovely influx of supportive messages. Before that point, I wrote a message to my closest friends, a sort of group message. But I did it in that way where I posted it on Facebook because I just didn't want to have thousands of conversations over and over again explaining the same thing. You know, I just thought, no, that's going to be a nightmare, really taxing. So just, you know, get it out there.
Was there a difference in the first time that you came out and the second time?
Yeah, I mean, I was older and surer, you know, and more comfortable with knowing that that's what I wanted to do. I guess the people around me by the second time were like, yeah, and, you know, like, you know, clearly this was going to happen. I'm glad you're doing it now, you know. So I'd say the biggest difference apart from in my mother was just in me, where, you know, there was no doubts anymore. I was like 100% positive. And I didn't really care what I think I was worried about it changing me physically in ways that I didn't like or wasn't comfortable with. And I think I reached a point the second time around where I didn't care about that at all.
Do you think that you said the same thing when you came out both times?
Yeah, I think it was pretty much, yeah, I mean, it's quite easy. It's like, I don't identify as a woman, I identify as a man, and I've got to do something about it, you know. So I think it was pretty much the same.
And where in your life are you out?
Well, I mean, I'm a very public with my transness. I did a show about masculinity from a transgender man's perspective. So if you Google my name, it just there are like 50 articles that say transgender man Kit Redstone. So, you know, whether I like it or not, I'm out to the world. The only times that I don't tell people, and it makes me sad when this happens, is, and I don't know if it's me judging them more than I think they would be judging me. But for instance, I travel a lot. And I was in India with my wife about 6 months ago, and we were staying in this this incredible Airbnb place run by this Afghani princess and a Rajput aristocratic Indian man. And they were amazing. They were really eccentric, but they were very traditional as well. And, you know, like, we were taken for tea with the royal family of Jodhpur, and we had this insane time. And me and the man got on particularly well, and he would call me brother and hug me a lot. And a lot of the times that we were with them, I had this feeling that if I told them I was trans, there would be this massive divide between us, and that they would feel cheated, or they would feel that, you know, but that's just my perspective, and maybe I should have given them a chance, but I think I just didn't want to risk it because we were kind of staying in their house and I didn't want it to be awkward. And it's times like that that I don't tell people. I haven't told my neighbours as well, just because, again, that's me. I might be wrong, but my direct neighbours are a little bit, they seem a little bit right wing. You know, they're very nice, but they do seem a bit right wing. And I'm assuming that they wouldn't be on board with it, or that they would think of me differently.
And when you say that it's sort of like, it's that kind of situation, is that like the staying in someone else's house or like living close to someone? Is that what you mean by the...
No, I mean when I think someone is from a world where that might not be something that they would know about or understand, you know? So I was making that assumption, but I might be wrong, you know? And you never know, you know? But generally I tell people, if I become close to anyone, I would tell them. Like I've never hidden it. I mean, you know, it's just that there are certain circumstances where if it doesn't come up, I don't see the need to talk about it. Yeah.
Has it ever happened where like someone has approached you because they have read something like before you've had that conversation?
No, the only time anyone's ever approached me or asked me was before I transitioned medically. So people just had no idea if I was a girl or a boy. And, you know, there were ways in which it was great. You know, it gave me a kind of freedom and a liberation. And it meant that sometimes people were intrigued by that. But it also, there was a lot of negative stuff where, like, I've got into situations where men were really violent or, you know, sort of, you know, saying really unpleasant things. So that it was only before then, but since transitioning, like I'd say within about 6 months of taking hormones, there was no one seemed to question my gender at all.
So do you have any like particularly memorable coming out stories?
The only one that I remember as being kind of sticking out in my mind, and I think this is because it's the exception.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It was when I just started, well, I was a few months or whatever, 6 months into transition. I went to a friend's wedding. And obviously, like any wedding, there are lots of people there you don't know who know nothing about you. Me and my wife went and we made friends with this couple who are a few years older than us, maybe in their mid-40s, early 40s. And they were lovely. She was like a human rights lawyer. And I can't remember what he did. I think he worked in the arts, did something. And they were really funny and lovely and we got on really, really well. And then the talk turned to... It turned to feminism, and we were talking about feminism, and obviously she was really, you know, she was a real feminist and, you know, all of, you know, really kind of right on. And I thought a really kind of open-minded liberal person. And I said that I was making a play which I thought was feminist. And I said, oh, it's a play about masculinity and it's me and three other guys. And it's exploring what it means to be a man. And she said, why is that feminist? That's just four guys talking about being men. That's the last thing we need. And I said, yeah, but it comes from a slightly different perspective because I'm transgender. And she just completely stopped, like, looked utterly shocked. And then she was like, sorry, can I ask what you mean by that? And I was like, I'm transgender. Like, and she goes, but you just don't look like you want to be a woman. And I was like, no, I'm female to male. So I used to be a woman and now I'm transitioned. Well, I was born in the body of a woman and I'm transitioned to be male. And that's how I identify. And at first she kind of looked like she didn't believe me because I think she'd never met a trans person before. She thought that trans people had to look a certain way. And then it kind of dawned on her. And then from then on, like, they avoided us, like, for the whole rest of this wedding. And I only mention it because I've experienced that once, you know what I mean? And you know, and for I think a transgender experience, like a tiny, you know, just being subtly ignored is nothing. You know what I mean? It's absolutely nothing. But I remember it because it was the only time that anyone had ever reacted like that, you know? And so it made me almost regret having told them because we then could have carried on enjoying ourselves. And that, you know, it slightly kind of ruined the rest, not ruined it, but it, you know, it was a slight sort of, I don't know what the phrase is, like the fly in the ointment or whatever. And it seemed to kind of ruin their night because I think they felt very awkward as well. So, yeah, so that's always the one that sticks out in my mind.
Do you think that has informed your decision when you don't tell people?
Yeah. Because I think, you know, a lot of people, when they know me and they don't know I'm trans, make all sorts of assumptions that they're kind of comfortable feeling. And then when they know I'm trans, it kind of throws them into confusion, you know, about that and what that means and what, you know, you know, are they able to relate to me in the same way? So I think it does change the way people see you. Oh, I also had a non-coming out story.
Amazing.
Story about not coming out.
First ever on the coming out.
Yeah,
tapes.
Well, you know, thanks. Where I'm trying to sell my boat, and a couple came to look at the boat, and they were chatting to me, and the guy was saying, "I want to move on a boat because I can't stand living in London anymore." And I was like, "Oh yes, well, me too." And he goes, you know it how it is, mate. It's just full of trannies. It's full of transgender people and this non-binary bullshit." He was like, "I just can't handle it. I can't handle being told how I should, like, you know, like, respond to someone or what pronoun I should call them. I don't give a shit." And I was like, you know, and in that moment, what I should have done was said, "I'm transgender." And what you just said is really offensive and stupid. But I didn't. Because I wanted to sell my boat. So I just swallowed it. And I was like, yeah, I know what you mean. But, you know, it's not, you know what I mean? I don't know. That's not really my experience. You know, just some bullshit like that. And I felt really shit about that afterwards. I felt like a total coward. And also very greedy and avaricious.
Did you sell your boat?
No. So it was all for nothing.
You should have sold the boat to them and then been like,
"Congratulations!" But they didn't want to buy the boat. So not only did I have to tolerate this, but he also didn't end up buying our houseboat. So, you know,
that's such a weird. I'm going to escape London and all of the people there.
I was like, "Little do you know, here we are lurking in the countryside,
selling
like
your
weasels."
Boats.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I understand why you didn't come out there, I think, more than in some of the, like, I understand why you didn't maybe haven't come out to your neighbors, but I understand more why you didn't come out to the people who
I just couldn't be bothered, you know. It's like a 20-minute thing that, you know, it just wasn't going to be pretty for anyone. You know, so yeah, wish he could listen to this podcast though.
I don't think that he is my audience.
No, it's a shame. He should be. I think he'd learn a lot.
It's such a bold move.
Yeah, I know. But that's what happens when you're read as a straight sort of you know, cisgendered man, you just hear all kinds of bullshit. You know what I mean? I've had cab drivers like slowing down and pointing at a girl whose like knickers are slightly kind of, you know, showing from the back of her jeans and asking, you know, saying really noxious things about what we would probably like to do to her. And I'm like, no, mate, no. You know, I mean, all kinds of stuff. I have a lot, lots and lots of guys have made references to my balls, which I don't have. So, you know, there's a lot of ball talk. Do you know what I mean?
Was this stuff that you expected?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so, but it's very odd joining that club, you know? It's very odd going from being, like, read as just super queer, you know, super sort of different, and to being, like, read as really normative. You know, it makes me want to put on a dress sometimes.
So we're talking a lot about experiences which are weird or bad when you're talking to people from outside of the LGBT community.
Yeah.
But have you had any bad experiences within the community where people, because they're reading you?
Yeah. So I think I mentioned to you when we met.
This is my super smooth interview
technique. Yeah, yeah. No, I see what you mean. Yeah, I just felt I couldn't. I just had to
couldn't give up the lie.
No, exactly. I'm sorry. You know, the holy airwaves and that. I went to a queer club, bar whatever, or club whatever, or something. And I'd been there before transitioning, and, you know, it had been great. And I went there for a night, and there were two lesbians kissing and dancing, and one of them, they were quite drunk, and one of them kind of stumbled and fell on me. And I sort of, you know, said, "Are you okay?" And she just looked at me with absolute hatred and just said, "You don't belong here. This is a place, you know, this is a place for us to be safe. This is our safe space." And, you know, in that moment, I'm not going to say, "Well, I'm trans and I do belong here," because, you know, I mean, I just don't want to have to do that. But that was quite shocking. And I think that was a kind of wake up call for me, where I was like, which world do I belong in? Because I'm not a cisgendered man, and their world doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like my world, because we've had different experiences, any more than, you know what I mean, like a sort of gay club felt like my world, or a queer club. So, you know, it's a funny place. You do, as a trans person, you are in this kind of strange liminal space a lot of the time.
On that sort of slightly more, I don't know, theoretical, for want of a better word, kind of conceptual place that we've reached, the final question is, what does coming out mean to you?
I have absolutely no idea how to answer that question.
I'm sorry, now ask you some scaffolding questions. So you said that when you were very young, you had this idea that, like, just everyone around you was very stupid, and they, like, just had this weird kind of view of the world that didn't fit with yours. Yeah. Would you consider yourself, when you were that age, to be out?
Yeah, in some ways, yes. Yes. I mean, my mum told me the story that I don't remember, but she told me that she took me to see Jack and the Beanstalk, and they asked me on stage, you know, how they ask kids on stage to do, you know, silly kid tricks on them or something. And she asked me on, this guy asked me on stage, and he put a microphone to my mouth and he said, "What's your name?" And I said, "My name is Kevin." And then he said, "Why are you wearing a skirt, Kevin?" And I said, "Because I'm Scottish." And this, I was like, I think I was like six or something, you know, and my mum was just like, "Oh God, here we go again," you know. So,
it's a sharp 6 year old.
Yeah, well, yeah. I really believed I was a boy. Yeah.
That was the.
Not Scottish.
No.
No, I didn't. That was a lie.
It was a good one, though.
No, thanks. It was quite quick thinking.
So you have written this, you wrote the play Testosterone.
Yeah.
Which is about your experiences with this world of.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of like loosely autobiographical. So it's my stories, but told, you know, with some creative license, and set in a moment where I go into a changing room for the first time as a man. The male changing room, And you know, it's set around this very few minutes of real time where I mistakenly take someone else's towel to get changed with. And from that point of drama, it kind of spirals into these fantasies and memories from the past and stuff like that. So it's quite an unconventional show in terms of narrative, but it's very, very silly and irreverent and sort of, it's a joyous and dark exploration of masculinity.
And why did you write a play about your experiences?
I'd swore to myself that I would never write an autobiographical play, but it just kind of came about. So I was working on the play in collaboration with a theatre company called Rum and Clay, and we just wanted to make a show about masculinity. Like, there was when we started, there was absolutely no, you know, there were no plans to use my stories. But as we sort of started talking and devising and, you know what I mean, laying out material, those stories sort of suited our topic. You know what I mean? There was something really wonderfully metaphorical about becoming a man at the age of 34 that kind of resonated with the whole experience of becoming a man or a woman at any age. You know what I mean? There was something universal about it. So it was wanting to tell a story about masculinity using a transgender person as a metaphor for identity, I guess, and change and stepping into the unknown.
Do you think that you have a better understanding of who you are now, like having written this autobiographical play, having all the experiences that you've had, or when you were, you know, that child on stage being introduced as Kevin?
Yeah, you know, in some ways that child on stage was less questioning, less confused in a way. You know what I mean? It was much simpler for Scottish Kevin in a way than it is for me now, you know, because I don't think I, you know, I'm surrounded by all kinds of discourse and questioning of what is gender. And, you know, in the show we explore it, but we never really answer it. You know, which, I mean, I don't really make theatre where I answer questions or you know what I mean? They're never really sort of like, you know, they're never sort of categorically, we believe this, you know, they're always more open-ended than that. But yeah, I think in some ways that child on stage who said that they were Kevin was the sort of purest form of me. And the world, you know what I mean? Like, my experiences and other people's opinions have created such a kind of cacophony of mess in my head that even though I'm happy and proud and comfortable with who I am massively, you know, I'm always in flux in the way that I see gender and identity. And I wasn't then. You know, it was much simpler. But then it was probably simpler because it was much more binary, because I was a child and because the world presented itself in that way. You know, so now I think I question, what is masculinity anyway? I mean, I'm a man. What does that mean? Like, what makes me a man? You know what I mean? Where do I start and I begin and, you know, end? And you know what I mean? I'm kind of, the whole thing is mystifying.
I think it's a good place to end on.
Yeah, great.
Thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to me, Keris Bradley. I'd like to say a couple of thank yous to the other people who've worked on this project. So Alex Lathbridge, who has helped with the hosting of the podcast and also the compiling of the music that you've heard, and to Scary Boots for creating our incredible artwork. Please subscribe, review, tell your friends, spread the word. And if you want to get involved and be interviewed on the podcast, then there's a link on the website and in the bio of our Twitter. So there's a little form that you can fill out. I hope you have a lovely day. So can people still see Testosterone?
So they can look on my website. So that's www.kitredstone.com. And I normally update with shows and stuff. We're taking it to Canada. So if anyone's in Canada, and then we're doing a few dates in the UK, but they're not confirmed yet.
Amazing. And is that the best place to find out about your projects, or do you have other online presences?
On Twitter. I think I'm Kit Redstone on Twitter.
Okay.
I think so.
Well, if you go and follow the Coming Out Tapes on Twitter, then we will have tagged you in the post. But nobody follows us on Twitter. We have like 90 followers on Twitter and so many more listeners. So we need everyone to follow us on Twitter.
Yeah. Follow them on Twitter.
There we go. Okay. That's it.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.